Hope you can come back to the present moment and pay attention. So we were discussing Anapanasati Sutta. This is available in Majjhima Nikaya. Directly deals with breathing meditation or be mindful about breathing. Actually, the beauty of this sutta is that Buddha mentions this or Buddha preaches this to a wider audience. At that time, there were many monks, especially some young monks, many young monks. They were being trained by various arahants, the elders. So they were taught various meditation techniques and they were practicing diligently. But Buddha wants to give them some single practice which would be capable of fulfilling all four types of satipatthana. You know, there are four types of satipatthana. Kayanupassana, one related with the body. Then Vedananupassana, which is related with the feelings. Chittanupassana, related with the mind. And Dhammanupassana, that is considering about the states of the mind. So what Buddha did was, so he actually has observed the minds of all the available young monks. And he understood for all of them, since this Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, is quite useful to anybody. So all of these monks are quite capable and they are diligent where they want to improve their mindfulness, improve their wisdom, improve their concentration. So therefore, Buddha recommends Anapanasati as one very important, one very useful technique. And he opens up with a very kind of an informative clause telling Anapanasati bhikkhave bhavita bahuli kata mahapala hoti mahani satsa. Monks, but when you practice Anapanasati, when you cultivate Anapanasati, it will be very beneficial and it will be very helpful and it will give a lot of benefits, it will give a lot of results. And there he mentions Anapanasati bhikkave bhavita bahuli kata chattaro satipatthane paripurenti. If one fulfills Anapanasati, if one practice Anapanasati, there is a possibility of fulfilling all four foundations of mindfulness. Not only that, he then further mentions chattaro satipatthane bhavita bahuli kata satta bojjhange paripurenti. If one completes, if one fulfills four types of satipatthana, that leads to the development of seven enlightenment factors, seven bojjhangas. Then he further explains satta bojjhanga bhavita bahuli kata vijja vimuttim paripurenti. If one fulfills seven enlightenment factors, that will helps to develop vijja, that is the knowledge about the reality, and the freedom, that is the vimutti. So that is in a way the ultimate goal. So therefore Buddha comes up with a very beautiful path where the Anapanasati acts like a base. It's like the ground level. And you keep that as the reference, that as the ground. And on top of that, you are building various skills. You may be building body-related mindfulness. You may be building feelings-related mindfulness. You may be building mind-related mindfulness, awareness. And again, you are refining that mindfulness and even developing the understanding of mental states. And not only that, Anapanasati can be kept as the ground, as the base level, and that being used to develop seven types of bojjhangas. And then, still keeping Anapanasati as the ground, one can further develop knowledge and wisdom and the freedom. So basically, this is a very beautiful recipe in a way, kind of a very beautiful prescription. So it requests us to continue Anapanasati or practice Anapanasati in a particular manner. So Buddha gives us this specific structure. So it is not that we do Anapanasati the way we like, but rather Buddha gives us a kind of a procedure. So that procedure comes up with 16 steps. 16 steps. The first four steps, if one develops well, it will fulfill Kayanupassana. Next four steps, if one fulfills properly, that helps to fulfill Vedananupassana. And again, the next four steps, if when one is practicing, one would be able to cultivate Chittanupassana. And the last four steps, when one cultivate, it helps to develop Dhammanupassana. So therefore, we were discussing these steps one by one. We have discussed almost eight steps. Already we have discussed eight steps. Anyway, I thought of revisiting the last two steps because they are quite important. Because there are many meditators who can go wrong or shift into wrong paths on these last two steps. I'll just recall last four steps. So when we calms down, say when breath calms down, so then we are reaching the second four steps that is related to the Vedananupassana, being aware of the feeling tone. The first four steps is Kayanupassana, just being aware of the breath, aware of the in-breath, aware of the out-breath. Now one focuses whether it is longer or shorter. And then one is trying to understand whether this is the beginning of the in-breath, middle of the in-breath, end of the in-breath, and maybe a slight gap just before the beginning of out-breath. And after that, one may understand the beginning of out-breath, middle of out-breath, end of out-breath, and there are still a slight gap, short gap, just before the beginning of next in-breath. So likewise, one is establishing oneself very well with this breath, in-breath and out-breath. So actually, you can't reach this kind of a stage if you don't have enough mindfulness, because breath naturally itself is a very delicate object, very subtle object, very soft object. So in order to recognize all these very subtle aspects of the breath, one needs very fine or refined mindfulness, very sharpened mindfulness. Actually, this whole story, whole step-by-step process helps us to develop this kind of a mindfulness. So the breath is giving us a kind of a challenge by continuously evolving. So say you started your mindfulness on a couple of months ago. So if you continue a practice, you might understand the breath evolves. It may not stay as it is. Say after 2 weeks of practice, breath has become somewhat refined. After another 2 weeks of practice, it might be further refined. And it becomes subtler and subtler. So likewise, there's an evolvement of breath happens. So we have to understand that. Don't expect that breath will behave in a very similar way or appears every day in the same form, but rather it also evolves. So this evolvement actually is a kind of a challenge to the yogi, because as you know, maintaining your attention on a gross object and maintaining your attention on the refined object is different. Now, in order to maintain your attention on a gross object, you may need, in a way, a kind of some amount of mindfulness. But if you want to maintain your attention on a subtle object, refined object, you need very sharp mindfulness. So this is how the breath evolves, from gross to subtle. So likewise, so as this breath evolves, you may... You may understand that you have to facilitate calming down this process. So the fourth step Buddha mentions, therefore, passam bhayam kaya sankharam. So now the body is calming down, the breath calms down, and you are facilitating that. Now we can't sleep at this level. Most often we might even sleep because there is no much activity right now. You don't have nothing much to do. But the breath is calming down. The in-breath calms down, out-breath calms down, the whole body calms down. So it appears like you are going to sleep. But the point is, rather than allowing yourself to sleep, you have to be very vigilant, very awake at this moment. Because otherwise, once the gross forms of defilements calms down, there's a higher possibility that you get caught to Teenamidda, you get caught to sloth and torpor, and to drowsiness, and ultimately to the sleep. So therefore, we have to maintain this mindfulness in a very balanced manner, without effort, maintaining much effort, at the same time without completely removing your effort, but to maintain the necessary balance. If you are able to maintain such balance, then the breath further calms down, and ultimately yourself, your body becomes extremely tranquil. So you have to facilitate this, and breath calms down. Now you can't recognize whether this is the in-breath or out-breath. And you can't understand even whether this sensation is available either at the nostril or at your neck or at your chest or at your tummy or wherever it is. You can't even recognize that. So that location information will be lost. And even the time information is lost. And it is an improvement. Don't think that you are losing this information, all these perceptions, because of something wrong. But rather, when your mindfulness sharpens and it is very refined, your concentration is very refined, very focused, and now you are being aware of on something which is available closer to the nostril, and it's a kind of an indication that something is available, in breathing happens, but can't distinguish whether this is in-breath or out-breath. So this is a stage that you might reach. After that, the piti can arise, the piti sukha, the what you call rapture and happiness, sort of blissful feelings, happy feelings, pleasurable feelings, kind of comfort, all these things can happen. So we need to recognize these things. Typically what happens is, when comfort or happiness or pleasure happens, we simply hold them. We want to have them. We want to possess them. And we are embracing them. And we become a victim of them. And we even sometimes we jump high and we enjoy it and say we become elated from that. But rather, at this stage, what we need to do is to understand all these different pleasurable feelings, happy feelings, enjoyable feelings, are types of feelings. They are not yours. They have happened due to various causes, and you, like an outsider, you are watching them. Like you watch the breath. Breath is something natural phenomena. And you, like an observer, kind of a neutral observer, you being able to look at it. Breath happens, breath is a bodily phenomena, and you, like an observer, like an external observer, you can simply watch it. Same approach. There are various beautiful feelings, pleasurable feelings, happy feelings happen. Now you have to be the observer and come out of that and simply observe. So this is something we need to practice, something we need to learn. Otherwise, what happens is we become an actor, a part and partial of the feeling. But right now, we have to come out of the feeling and to recognize how these feelings are behaving. They may be arising, they may be changing, they may be passing away. And even though they appear like a single feeling, there may be a collection of feelings. So likewise, there are a lot of information available there. If we are able to be very mindful, sharp mindfulness is maintained, then we are able to understand all these subtle details, more and more details. And then Buddha say, the next stage, that is Chitta Sankhara Patisangedi Asasisamiti Sikkhati. So now we might sort of experience various different types of feelings where you might understand that you have no control. Various feelings happen and you simply have to observe. It is not that you create them or you ask them to come or you do something to arise, but rather it's a process. It's a kind of a evolvement. They manifest due to various causes, and you have to be simply out of the picture and simply watch it, and you have to allow it to happen. And there's a kind of a precaution we have to take here, because the feelings are all right. We can simply be aware of them, and we should not get caught to them, and that in a way we can handle. But the difficult part sometimes is the perception, sanya. So various perceptions also can happen. Say for example, your body further calms down, almost like body disappeared, body like floating, and almost your feeling about the body is very subtle. And now feelings also fairly calm down, but at that time, various perceptions can arise, various signs can arise. Suppose you are a person with a lot of faith. You have a lot of faith on the Buddha. So sometimes maybe a Buddha image can appear. If you are a person who always go to the temple and worship pagoda or worship the Bodhi tree or whatever it is, and there's a possibility that the pagoda can appear, the Bodhi tree can appear. Or if you are a person who believes in gods and all these celestial beings and all, so there's a possibility such kind of a celestial being can appear. Suppose you are a person with sometimes get quickly agitated, and you have a lot of hate in the mind and easily get angry and all that kind of a temperament, there's a possibility sometimes kind of skeletons or sort of demons or that kind of a figure can appear. And suppose you have gone through some traumatic experience, some tragedies and all these things, there's a possibility the relatives or your parents or whoever it is involved in that tragedy can appear. So this is actually a creation of the mind. So maybe it happen in the positive side, even it can happen in the negative side, both are creations of the mind. So they are manifestations of the mind. They are simply the perceptions. So if we don't understand this point, we get caught. So there are many meditators who being caught to these various perceptions. They give more value to these perceptions, these signs, and then they go after them. Say for example, kind of a celestial being can appear. And don't think that these are only the forms, only the visible visions, but even slight sounds can happen. Kind of a tingling sound or some kind of a bell sound, or even someone like murmuring. These kinds also can happen. All these things are perceptions. All these things are signs, sanya. And Buddha says, marichi kupama sanya. All these perceptions, signs, marks, all are like mirage. Don't think, don't get misled them as water, but they are simply a mirage. So therefore, we have to be very careful about this stage, because when mind calms down, when the body calms down, the feelings calms down, there's a higher possibility of various perceptions to arise. So depending on your temperament, depending on your character, various perceptions can happen. So we have to be careful. Either it may be a Buddha image, either it may be a celestial being, either it may be a past away relative, either it may be a skeleton, maybe a devil, whatever it is, all are perceptions. Positive or negative, both are perceptions, and we simply have to be very wise at this stage. So if we are very wise, we simply come back to the breath. We simply come back to our body. If these perceptions happen, because sometimes we want to come back, we want to be grounded again. If we simply follow these perceptions, they can even grow, and you start to give value to them. Next time where you sit, in order to see that perception, in order to see that sign. So that is an entirely wrong approach. Because when you start to expect that kind of a perception, it starts to happen again and again. And next day you might even tell someone that I have seen this, and he has told something, and it is true. And now I can give some forecasting, you know, various activities you can start, maybe giving medicine or healing others, or forecasting about the future, and all various things can happen. But all these are, in a way, a wrong path, one can say. All this actually deviates ourselves from the correct path, and we will go into a wrong path. Therefore, we have to be very careful when these perceptions happen. But don't think that these definitely have to happen. There is no such kind of a rule that everybody may come across these kind of perceptions. But there are many characters who doubt about these things. So for them, these perceptions never happen. They have never seen a celestial being. They have never seen a Buddha image while meditating. They have never seen a skeleton while meditating, because they don't believe these things. They understand immediately these are all mind-made. You know, I mean, when your eyes are closed, how can you see this image? So it's an entirely a mental image. It's not a real image, but a mental image. If you simply have this logic, when your eyes are closed, whatever appearing, all these visions are merely illusions, merely mental images. So if you understand that point, then don't give value to these various mental images, mental signs, perceptions. Simply come back to yourself, come back to the posture, come back to various other feelings maybe. Or if the breath is available, come back to the breath. So this way you would be able to calm down these perceptions, calm down all various types of feelings. So therefore Buddha recommends that kind of a calming down. So therefore the eighth stage is called, or the eighth step is called, Asambhayam Chitta Sankharam Asasisamiti Sikkati. So you are calming down, you are tranquilizing all these mental images, mental various feelings, and you become further calm, your mind become further tranquil. Once all these perceptions are taken out, all these signs are taken out from the mind, the clarity of mind increases. You know, more and more perceptions, more and more these kind of mental images sort of hinder the mind. So it will hinder the vision of the mind, clarity of the mind. It may get cluttered, but once they are all taken out, when they fade away, then the clarity of mind increases. Your mind becomes like a pure crystal. You can understand everything happens in the right moment. And you are very awake. Your clarity of mind increases. And it's very sharp, very diligent, very bright kind of a mind. So this is the, in a way, the proper end result of the eighth stage. Your mind is well focused, well aware, no signs, no much feelings, less disturbances. You are in a very awake present moment. So with that, I'd like to conclude today's in a way the short Dhamma sermon, and now we can get on to the questions. And if you have any doubts or any questions related to the today's Dhamma sermon, you feel free to ask that as well. Shamila, back to you.
Yes, we move on to the questions. Today we have received 6 questions so far. So if you need any, you like to ask questions directly from Bhante, you can raise hand on the Zoom, and then against your name we'll see the blue icon, and then we can unmute you to ask the question. But otherwise you can also use the Google form. It's already on the chat window if you want to post anything, or through the chat window you can also send a message directly to me, and I will read out the question if you don't want to ask the question yourselves. So I'm just going to share the screen so they can also see the questions we have. Is it possible to see the, Bhante, can you see the questions?
Yes, I can. But I like you to read.
Yes, I will read it. But not done this before, so I'm not very good at doing this. So that's why I want to have it there so that we can see the question as well in case. So the first question is, it's a general question. Dear Venerable Sir, thank you very much for the insightful Dhamma talk. We get a lot of confidence in practice when our experience can be linked to the signpost given in the sutra. It is really helpful to remember these steps, at least the initial 12, so that when we practice, we know where there are signs or similar observations. Is there a narrative or summary version of the 16 steps in English? Much merit for your valuable service, Bhante.
Actually, summary, rather than I would say the summary, I mean, if you have access to Bhikkhu Bodhi's middle length discourses book, Majjhima Nikaya book, Anapanasati Sutta is available in Majjhima Nikaya, so you can refer that. Or else, probably I can write down and these 16 steps, and maybe I can post to Chamila, so that I simply can extract this 16 steps from. Maybe Suranga, can you extract from Bhikkhu Bodhi's book? It's available, and you can write it down, and we can upload it to the web, so that maybe when we are discussing, maybe we can see those steps, then it may be easy to understand. That's also a good point. What do you think, Bhante? Suranga?
Yeah, okay, Bhante, we can do that.
I can pass you the Pali 16 steps. Probably you can insert the English meaning by referring Bhikkhu Bodhi's book. Can't hear, Chamila. Can't hear. You are being muted.
Sorry. Right. Okay. So this is question number 2. It's a sitting practice question. Dear Bhante, during the last Dhamma talk, there was a description of various rapture, joy and happy feelings in the breathing mindfulness stage. I have come across joy and rapture in 2 occasions during my sitting practice. Recently, once in walking practice. However, these observations seems rare and one of a kind rather than a usual stage in the practice. Is it because the observation and experience of joy and rapture is like that, or something not right with my practice? Example, I do not practice enough to make it normal and part and parcel of my experience.
I have come across joy and rapture in 2 occasions during my sitting practice, recently once in walking practice. Yeah, even in walking practice, this can happen because, these kind of feelings arise when the mind calms down, when the mind settles. So this settling can happen not only in the sitting, but also in walking as well. Because the walking also is allowing yourself to calm down and giving you a kind of freedom. So all the tensions and all this pent up energy being released. So therefore your mind further calms down. So you feel sort of very gentle, you feel sort of expanded, any kind of blockage in the mind being released. So there's a higher possibility. So two various beautiful feelings can occur in walking as well. So don't think, not only in walking, say for example, you are being traveling, say you are traveling in a train. And you can simply calm down and you forget about whatever the surrounding and you come back to yourself. These things can happen because the point is you have to come to a very relaxed mood. Sometimes this relaxed and most comfortable mood happens in maybe outside of your sitting session, because sometimes while in the sitting session, we may do over, we might apply too much effort, we exert too much effort, so that can be a hindrance. But in a walking session or maybe in a typical another kind of an activity, if you simply allow the mind to blossom, to grow naturally, so this kind of a balance can happen. So these kind of beautiful feelings, pleasant feelings can arise. Yes, and don't expect that either. If you expect the next day the same thing, then it may not happen.
Okay. So moving to the next question. This is a general question. Venerable Bhante, how can one meditate well when there may be many things happening, whether with work, family life, etc., that are outside our control? Before we do sitting or walking practice, do you think it is important to deal with those external things first? Because sometimes the thoughts can be distracting when trying to meditate. Or do you think with practice we can develop mindfulness no matter what is happening in our lives? Thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, if there are some, say, activities that you can finish quickly, then much better to finish them, attend to them, and come back to your sitting. Because otherwise, they keep on coming to your mind, I have to do this, I have to do that. All these things are kind of disturbing. So, therefore, always better to finish whatever the most important activities always coming to your mind before you go to the sitting. But there are certain situations that you can never finish your various activities. Because you have a list of activities in your agenda. Then it may be very difficult to completely finish them and come to meditate, because then you can never meditate. So, on the other hand, if we consider, say, walking meditation as an example, so we have our duty is to pay focus, keep our attention on the, say for example, touching sensation of your foot. But at that time, various other things are also available. You can see various things, you can hear many sounds, and maybe other people are also around you, and even certain thoughts can happen in the mind. So many things are available. But your skill is to, among all these various other activities, how can I focus my attention to where it is necessary? That is the place of the soul, at the ground of the, say, the touching sensation. So that is, in a way, the training that we are getting through walking meditation. So for a one who is fairly skilled in walking meditation, so this kind of facility is available, this kind of a skill is available, because while in walking meditation, this is the environment that we are actually dealing with. There are various other activities are happening, but we are paying our attention only to the, say, to our souls, to our legs, various other sensations, and that is the targeted group, that is the targeted experience. So if we apply the same principle to the other day-to-day activities, you may have various things in your home, in your, say, office or whatever it is happening, many things in the around the world, can we able to pay our attention right now to breathing, right now to rising and falling? So that is, in a way, giving up everything, giving up whole world and coming back to the present moment. So this is a kind of a skill that we need to develop. So this actually will develop slowly. Don't worry at the moment, even though you can't do it. More and more you do walking and further improvement of your mindfulness, you may gain this kind of a skill.
Okay. So moving on to the next one, question number 4. It's a sitting practice question. Venerable Bhante, if I may respectfully ask for some guidance with some obstacles in my sitting practice. Since this program began, I have been meditating about 4 or 5 days per week. Some days only sitting, other days walking followed by sitting. I have reached a level where some days my breath is subtle and I experience pleasant feelings like you described. Over the last 2 weeks, I have found my practice is a bit difficult. My obstacles include, 1, my thoughts are distracting me more than usual and taking longer to redirect to breath. 2, I have hopes or expectations to achieve those peaceful states. 3, I'm expecting to reach these states with less effort. 4, I am feeling impatient with myself. 5, I'm getting distracted by other bodily sensations. Example, movement of my stomach with breath, pins and needles in my legs, spine bending forward. I am feeling stuck in this circle of thought and distractions, and I can't seem to break free. Thank you for your guidance in my situation.
Yeah, actually, this is very common, because once we come across some kind of experience, we start to sort of condition our mind expecting that kind of an experience next, in the next sitting as well. So that expectation itself becomes the hindrance, kind of a bottleneck, kind of the disturbance to our practice, because then our mind is blocked. We are narrowing down our mind, focusing something happening in the future. So we are not preparing or giving proper environment. We are not giving the proper causes and conditions, rather expecting something happened in the past. So this is the kind of a mistake that we all do. So rather every time when you are meditating, go like a beginner, because there are various paths available. Right now you have experienced something going through one path. But when you are going with an open mind, your approach is a kind of a naive approach, kind of a sort of a beginner's approach, then you are ready to do whatever it is happening. You have a kind of open attitude. So with such kind of an attitude, there's a possibility of opening up another path. Because you know, in order to achieve, say, mental clarity of calmness of the mind, tranquility of the mind, it is not the single path available. There are many paths available. So one day it can happen in one way, and another day it can happen in another day. But if you are expecting every day to happen in the same way, then you are trying to condition your mind. You are blocking your progress. So therefore, there's a beautiful, I think I have already mentioned about this book some time back. There's a beautiful book from one Zen master called Sunyuru Suzuki. That book is called Beginner's Mind, Zen Mind. So he's telling that you always have to sit like a beginner. Even though you may be 5 years experience or 10 years experience, so have a more like a beginner's mind, kind of an open mind, kind of a simple mind, unconditioned mind. So don't condition yourself, I have to do like this, I have to do like this. It's okay to have the general instructions, general procedures to follow. But other than that, if we have the burden of expectations, that itself will be the hindrance. So simply go to your practice like a beginner, completely forgets about the past experiences, open up, and then appreciate whatever happens. I mean, these all blissful experiences, various feelings are all impermanent. Don't expect they to be available throughout your life. They come and go. So that is the vipassana. That is the reality we are going to understand. Either may be painful feelings, either may be neutral feelings, or either may be blissful or happyful feeling. They all come and go. None of them remain. You have very less control over them.
So that person has put in a general question as well. So I'll just read that out now. One thing. I also have a general question to ask, please. I have noted that some of the other meditators on the forum sometimes mention time frames. Example, some number of minutes taken to clear the mind, or how long they can remain in a peaceful state. When I am meditating, I really don't have any sense of time. Rarely, I might get a thought that my alarm will ring soon, but most of the time, I have no idea. Even in my day-to-day life, I don't have a good sense of time. Is this simply a lack of mindfulness? If so, how to improve this? Much merits for your time and guidance.
Yeah, I mean, when your attention is, very well focused and you are observing some sort of a phenomena, so you typically lose the information about the time. As I mentioned today, the time and the location, that information will be lost. And it is an improvement. Don't think that, say for example, you are keeping your attention at the nostril. At the beginning, you understand this is the in-breath, this is the out-breath. And now the time is 3:15, something like that, say for example. But later, once you are well focused and you can't recognize whether this is the in-breath or out-breath, and you can't recognize, you can't sort of feel where it is. I mean, either at the nostril or at your forehead or at your neck or at your chest or that kind of a relative information is also lost. And you even lost the time and you don't know what is the time right now. This is an improvement. So So therefore, if we consider about the meditation, so this kind of a scenario is possible. And at that time, we have to understand that we have kind of very focused, fairly narrowed kind of attention. And that is also necessary in order to understand, you know, localize what we are observing and to observe it properly. But on the other hand, if we consider the day-to-day activities, so more you become mindful, then this lost information is available. You will understand, okay, right now I am doing this kind of an activity. So the time is like this. So this is the activities available in the future. Likewise, you have a kind of a time frame. The mindfulness helps us to have a proper perspective about the complete picture. So I think you can continue. So these things may evolve. Don't expect that you have to have everything in the meditation and you don't have to have, I mean, in the outside of a meditation. I mean, these things can change.
Question number 6. Venerable Sir, it's a walking practice question. This question is related to my walking and sitting practice, but it can have a theoretical aspect as well. When I do walking practice, I can observe various sensations on the sole of my foot and also the difference between left and right foot. Also, after some time of continuous application of mindfulness to the process, I observe the changes in the primary object, similar to bridging of the sensations and building up a relaxed state. This happens both in walking and sitting. I feel like a third person watching the process. And this makes me think that it is a part of my mind watching another part of my mind. It seems like the thoughts generated due to the touch and other sensations are being watched by another kind of thoughts. They may both be changing, but is that a correct analogy? What is the final outcome of this practice? If I may reiterate my opinion, is it that we gradually understand the different facets of our mind and how it works by this process, mind watching another part of mind, and finally catch a phenomena which is not made out of mind?
Let me go through it again. When I do walking practice, I can observe various sensations on the sole. Yes. And also the difference between left and right foot. Correct. Also, after some time of continuous application of mindfulness to the process, I observe the changes in the primary object, similar to bleaching of the sensations and building up a relaxed state. This happens both in walking and sitting. Correct. I mean, this is how the meditation object evolves. That is necessary. I mean, necessary in the sense, this is how it typically happens. And we simply have to allow it to happen. I feel like a third person watching the process, and this makes me think that it is a part of my mind watching another part of my mind. So actually, if you consider the Kayanupassana, so there it is not that you are watching your mind from the mind, rather you are watching the body from the mind. So we can say the bodily activities are there, basically the element characteristics are there. So you are watching that element, how these element characteristics behave from your awareness. So that is the awareness, we can say, belongs to the mind. And it seems like the thoughts generated due to touch and other sensations are being washed by another. So, no, I mean, you don't need to have thoughts in a way, because if you consider thinking, so that is another aspect. Right now, I mean, we are not encouraging any kind of thinking here. Rather, some very silent observation is encouraged. So that is what happens typically in the walking meditation. In the beginning, there may be a certain amount of thinking going on, certain amount of ruminating or sort of proliferation can go on. But as a result of the practice, that also calms down. So you may understand, I have kind of an observation is available, but mind is very calm, very silent. There is no inner chatter. So that may be possible to understand. So then actually you are reaching a very beautiful stage of mindfulness where you are able to observe something with a very quiet mind. So So at that time, you can't say the thoughts are watching thoughts. It's wrong. No thoughts at the moment in the mind, but mind is very awake, very alert, well focused. And that such kind of a focused, alert, silent mind is observing maybe bodily phenomena, maybe observing various feelings. So that is possible. But on the other hand, if it comes to the Chittanupassana, so you are able to watch the mind in a similar manner. So there may be certain thoughts arise in the manner, in the mind, but you being able to look at it objectively. Lustis arise in the mind, thoughts are appearing in the mind, but you have the ability to watch them. If I give you a simile, say you are going to see a drama. Now the drama being played on the stage. If you are in the gallery, if you are in the being among the spectators, then you can watch the drama. But if you go to the stage and start to play a role in the drama, then you are in the wrong place. So Chittanupassana, you like an spectator, you like an observer, you are on the audience. You are not an actor in the drama. So don't be an actor in the drama, but come out of that and sit on the audience and enjoy. And you simply observe what is going on in the mind. It may be various thoughts coming and going, arising and then changing. And you may understand how you are trying to manipulate it, how you are adding certain parts, how you are dividing, how you are changing according to your likes and dislikes. So all these things can be possible to understand simply by watching the mind. So this watching aspect is another skill that we develop in the mindfulness. So this is how we are slowly building up this aspect, building up this skill. So we start with bodily part, that is the Kayanupassana, where you are being able to watch various bodily sensations like an outsider. While walking, you like a third person, you watch the whole process. Similarly, say various feelings arise, maybe happy feelings, painful feelings, whatever it is, you can watch like an outsider. At the same way, there may be various thoughts arising in the mind, you can watch like an outsider. So the outcome, we can say in a way, a kind of a clarity of mind. When you are not being caught up with all these thoughts, ongoing inner chatter, then you are able to calm down this inner chatter. So your mind becomes still, your mind becomes silent, your mind has the kind of a space, clarity of mind. So this is in a way the results, in a way.
So moving on to question number 7. Dear sir, when I was in the guided session today, I could retain my mind on the body and be mindful on various sensations of the body. After some time, say 5 minutes, my hands on the lap felt larger and heavier. I could not feel the fingers separately, but just a big bulge. I observed the hand much heavier than before, like made out of iron. I could not point the location, but I felt a lot of coldness and some hot streaks within the cold appearing on the hand. I could not feel much of the body except some vague sensations on other parts. Throughout the session until the bell rang, I could feel this heavy large bulge with various sensations in my hand. Do I have to establish my mindfulness on these vague signs or focus more on real sensations such as the breath?
Yeah, I mean, if you are confident now to watch these things, you can observe. You can start to watch. Because once we develop enough mindfulness, enough concentration through observing breath, so that developed mindfulness can be used to observe various other phenomena. So what you have experienced is kind of a sensations happen in between your fingers, and that can be observed. I mean, what you have experienced is a kind of an evidence that you have enough mindfulness, concentration to watch this, and you can now start to watch this as well. And this, everything change. I mean, don't expect this to happen next time as well. Even it can happen or not can happen. But when they are available, you can watch them.
Okay. Moving on to the last question on the sheet. There's a few questions on the chat, and also two people have raised their hands, so we go to them once we finish this one. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, I have been taught to practice loving kindness meditation at the end of sitting meditation, when the mind is calm and deep in meditation. Is this the best time to do this type of meditation, or does it interrupt the meditation process? Thank you.
I think if you can reverse the order, that would be much better. Before you go to deep meditation, you can do some metta, just to calm down yourself and to sort of have a soft mind, soft environment. Then you can go to Anapanasati or maybe Dhatu Manasikara or Vedanapasana, whatever that kind of mindfulness related meditation, because the mindfulness related meditation helps us to clear the mind, to calm down various, say, chattering, inner chatter, you know, various vitakkas, various thoughts. So once you are able to calm down, and then again you are making metta and sort of arising many different kinds of thoughts again, so that appears like you are disturbing the process. So typically, you know, the typical approach, the traditional approach is do that, what you call the four guardian meditations before you get on to the main primary object, main meditation. So similarly here, you can do a little bit of metta if it is necessary, and then go to the main meditation object, and then you can grow in that. And even the guardian meditations are not essential if your mind is in a very cool, kind of a calm, relaxed manner, because it is not a must. You can develop directly, maybe Anapanasati, or I mean right now, whatever the present practice that you are continuing. So that can be your priority. And once that is done, not a must to do metta. I mean, helpful, but more and more we have to discourage thinking in a way. If necessary, you can do some, intentional thinking when it is necessary. If you want to recall something, if you want to plan something, you can think. But on the other hand, we think too much. So therefore, we have to discourage that kind of excessive thinking and allow things to calm down and to have a very silent mind, still mind. So such mind is encouraged, such mind is recognized in the mindfulness practice.
Yeah, Sarna, so I've got in the chat window a continuation of that question. Can you please ask Swami Mahanse if he has any guidance he could offer about the metta meditation? If there,
yeah,
like how he could guide a beginner to do it?
Yeah, I mean, typically metta meditation, you can start with the typical approach. You are sitting cross-legged and have a very comfortable posture. And then you can start with yourself. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering. So likewise, some typical clauses are there. So you can feel yourself. You can close your eyes. You can feel yourself. You being calmed down. You being healing yourself. And sort of all the disturbance, all the tensions are being released. So you become well and happy. So you have to very much like imagining yourself being calm, being sort of happy, tranquil, and all the positive qualities are now being developed within yourself. You are very much like conditioning your mind in a way. So that you do first. Give me a minute, one moment. Sorry. Sorry about the disturbance. So in a way, actually, metta meditation, we do some sort of a conditioning of the mind to calm down ourselves and to in a positive manner, no harm actually. And then we can spread that type of metta towards someone who we respect. Maybe our teacher, or actually it has to be a same-sex teacher. So then you do, okay, may he be well, may he be happy, may he be free from suffering, may he be well and happy. Likewise, you simply do the same amount of metta, spread same amount of metta towards him as well. So likewise, so I mean, there's a long type of meditation available in the commentary. So, I mean, then you can select another teacher or another person whom you respect, and you can do the same thing again and again, because likewise, you have to train your mind just to spread metta. And then suppose you are taking someone you like, say your father, mother, your son, daughter, whatever it is. So, and you spread metta, and then you can take someone who have some neutral attitude towards with yourself, and then you spread the metta. And even someone you don't like can be taken, and then you can spread metta. So likewise, you can expand metta. So the point is, typically we like the people we can spread metta easily towards the people we like. But on the other hand, we can't very difficult to spread metta towards someone we don't like. But in meditation, it helps us to sort of cut off these boundaries and to have some similar amount of metta towards anyone who is available. That is where to all the beings in this planet, everywhere, so you can have similar amount of metta. So that is where you break off all these narrow boundaries, and you have a kind of expanded mind. And then, I mean, you can go to various directions. You can go to the front direction. All the beings in this front direction may be well, happy, free from suffering. And all the beings in the right direction may be well, happy, free from suffering. All the beings in behind direction, all the beings in left direction, all the beings in upper direction, down direction. So likewise, you are very much like pervading metta towards all the directions. So this is how, in a way, metta meditation being in a way improved or expanded to the metta cheto vimutti, where the freedom of mind can happen through metta. So therefore, there's a big story, big technology, technique available in metta. So typically, one can start with simply with oneself.
Yes, Swaminathan, so we've gone a little bit over time now. It's about 3 minutes, and there's one more question on the chat window, and two people have raised hands. So is it okay if we continue?
Can, yeah. Okay. No problem.
Yeah, Rumi and Bandula uncle, I just do the question on the chat window first. And then I'll just unmute you to ask the questions. So the question I've got is, Venerable Bante, can you please, in a nutshell, recap the 4 steps of Vedananupassana? I'm not clear on these four, as I missed the session last week. It would be very beneficial to have the summary of the 16 steps.
Yeah. First 4 steps belong to Kayanupassana. That is Digang Vasanto, Digang Vasasamiti Pajanati. Similarly, Rasang Vasasanto, Rasang Vasasamiti Pajanati. And then the third one is Sabbakaya Patisangvedi Asasisamiti Sikkati. Fourth stage is Pasambhayan Kaya Sankarang Asasisamiti Sikkati. I only preached you actually they come like a pair, breathing in and breathing out with the same information. So longer, shorter, seeing the whole breath, and then calming down. That is the 4 stages available in the Kayanupassana. The 4 stages available in the Vedananupassana, that is called Piti Patisangvedi Asasisamiti Sikkati. That is the first stage. Then the second is Sukha Patisangvedi Asasisamiti Sikkati. The third is Chitta Sankhara Patisangvedi Asasisamiti Sikkati. Eighth, or the last of this, Pasambhayan chitta sankharang asasisamita sikkhati. Calming down all these feelings and perceptions, you are breathing in and breathing out. So basically it's calming down. Allowing all the feelings to calm down. Allowing all various perceptions, signs, marks, everything to calm down. And your mind become more and more clear and less disturbed, less cluttered. So the clarity of mind increases.
Yeah, so those are all the questions that we have in the chat.
Another person raised hand, no? Bandula.
Yes, we've had the raised hand. So I think Rumi had a hand first. So let me just unmute her. Yeah, Rumi, you can ask the question.
Venerable Bhante, the sessions have been very valuable. I just wanted to share a website with everyone who is interested in the Pali Canon, Sutta Central, which is compiled and edited by Bhante Sujato, has the whole, the three Nikayas in both English, Pali, Sinhala and 16 other languages. If anyone's interested, they can have a look at the Anapanasati Sutta. Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation is there, as well as Bhikkhu Sujato. He gives more of a translation in simple English. So it's a very useful website if anyone's interested.
I'll unmute Vandila Ankar now. Yes.
Andami Bhante, I have a little question. I was listening to the last time Bhante's talk. So this time also I got the same question. So I thought I should have asked this time.
Okay.
My question is, Bhante, when I was listening that, this is something Loku Swamin was a lot of time telling about that Histhana. Is it that Histhana is simply what you have mentioned about Chitta Sankara? When you pass Chitta Sankara, you come into Histhana, or is it just simply calming of the mind? Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, I mean, we can say it's very much the calming of the mind. Typically, Histhana comes because this Histhana or the kind of empty mind can happen at different stages. Actually, even at the Kayanupasana level, when the breath calms down, when even body also very much like disappeared, so you feel like Histhana, you feel like empty. But this is in a way, this is not something deep emptiness or something that you come across through vipassana. This is simply a more gross sensations are calmed down. Now you have very less awareness, awareness is available, but there are no much activities at the moment. But on the other hand, say when you go to Vedanupassana, further calming down happens. Pasambhayan Chitta Sankara. So previously, Pasambhayan Kaya Sankaram, that is the fourth stage of the Kayanupassana. Then also calming down. The eighth stage, that is the Pasambhayan Chitta Sankaram, further calming down of feelings and the sense, perceptions, signs, marks. So further calming down. So it also appears like Histhana, but kind of empty. Compared to the previous emptiness, now this is a more clear emptiness, more deeper in a way, more pure. But then suppose you go to the Chittanupassana. Chittanupassana, you say, Chitta Padisangvedi, Asasisamgasi. You being aware of various thoughts going on in the mind. You simply allow the mind to little play and you start to watch it. And then naturally they calm down. And then Chitta Padisangvedi, then Abhipamodayan Chittam, Samadhan Chittam, Vimochayan Chittam. So those are the four stages available in Chittanupassana. So there, Samadhan Chittam means you allow the mind to further collect, to tranquil, Samadhan Chittam. And at that time, if you refer your body, that has fairly disappeared. If you consider the feelings, that also has fairly calmed down. If you consider the perceptions, that also have calmed down. And almost like nothing to perceive. So now you come across another emptiness which is more profound. So that is available in Chittanupassana, where the various mental states, various thoughts and all these disturbances available in the mind is further calmed down, and almost like there is nothing to attach, nothing to grasp. So therefore Buddha says, Vimochayan Chitta. Now you free your mind. Now you come across a more deeper emptiness because you have nothing to grasp, nothing to perceive in a way. There is a perception, I mean, kind of a level of sanya is available. It is not like a day-to-day sanya, day-to-day perceptions. Your mind is free from your mother, father, children, husband, wife, house, job, corona, all these things. All these typical perceptions are no more in your mind. Mind is utterly clear. So this is where you may come across more deeper type of emptiness, and therefore the emptiness, the levels of emptiness is different. One may interpret, I have come across this sthana even at the very early stages, but that is in a way is like a beginner. One has approached some amount of clarity of mind. Another person may interpret, okay, I have come across emptiness, but he may be in the Vedanupassana level where some feelings, perceptions calm down. And another person whose mind is completely free from any kind of grasping, so he also may come across emptiness, but that is more deeper.
There are no more questions on the chat window or the form so far, and we have also gone a little bit over time, so I think we can close the session for today. Want to, yeah, so I think I've been talking too much today, so Suranga, you can close the session, right?
Okay. So I'll wrap up today's session. Hope you all had a good guided session, insightful Dhamma talk and Q&A time. During next week, you can practice at home and present your experience for further guidance from Bhante, which we call Avatahan. If the guided recordings help you, all previous guided sessions with extra time to practice are now uploaded to the monastery website. Also, you can refer back to the Q&A recordings as well if needed. So if you are not, and also if you are not getting the weekly email update and the reminder, send an email address is on the chat window. We'll add you to the distribution list. So on behalf of everyone, I would like to thank Bhante for this valuable session and pay homage by saying sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Hope to see you all in 1 week's time. Therwan Sarnai.
Therwan Sarnai. Therwan Sarnai. Thank you very much.